This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Clarence Burkhead is the new sheriff of Durham. He's from Ashboro, began his law enforcement career as a deputy sheriff in Randolph County in the mid-80s, and after almost 20 years working in the public safety department at Duke University, became the chief of police in Hillsboro. Sheriff Burkhead is part of a wave of progressive new sheriffs taking over North Carolina. He ran on a platform that promised a change in the way the old regime ran the community. Among other things, Sheriff Burkhead wants to reduce gun violence, create a place where immigrants feel safe, and improve the conditions in the county jail. Sheriff Burkhead, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. What's been the biggest challenge since you took office?
Oh, just number of hours in the day. Yeah. They're not enough. And I'm really trying to get out and meet the community and as I promised when I was campaigning, to be transparent and engaging as much as possible. So I'm going from doing meetings with community groups, organizations who are all focusing on criminal justice reform, looking at some of the issues we're dealing with recidivism. So really, my biggest challenge right now has been time.
One of those communities that you talked about during the campaign and we're still talking about today is the immigrant community. House Bill 370 making its way through the legislature. Now that would require local law enforcement to honor ICE detainers. How do you feel about that?
Well, House Bill 370 is simply a bad bill. I know the North Carolina Sheriff's Association put out a letter of support, which I'm a member of the association simply by default. I am a sheriff, but I'm one vote and one voice. There's a lot of discussion about the bill and how it erodes the office of the sheriff, and we're constitutional elected office. We should not be told what to do. We should not have legislation trying to mandate that we cooperate with our federal partners. We already cooperate with all of our federal partners, including Homeland Security and ICE, to a degree. I simply refuse to honor the detainers because they're unconstitutional. They're not based on probable cause. I think they violate the Fourth Amendment. So House Bill 370, as I've said, I think is a bad bill, Frank.
Remind us what the detainer, what that means.
Well, an ICE detainer is a request from Immigration Customs Enforcement that asks local law enforcement to hold an individual they suspect is in the country illegally for a period of up to 48 hours until they can figure out what they choose to do next. Again, if I incarcerate anyone in my detention facility, that constitutes an arrest, and an arrest must be based on probable cause. And the final point I'll make is that federal detainers is a civil process. And by law, I am not allowed to enforce federal civil process. So it's very confusing and complicated. But understanding the law, I feel like I am on solid ground. They're unconstitutional, and several judicial officials have agreed with me.
The larger conversation around this and the conversation around law enforcement and immigrant communities has been, you know, sort of how to treat immigrant communities and build trust in those communities. I mean, there's one side of this argument that says, look, if people are here illegally, that word illegal should be the dominant word. You're wearing a badge. Let's enforce the law and send people back where they came from. And if they have the legal right to be here, have them go through that process. What part do you think local law enforcement has in that?
I think local law enforcement should focus on building safe communities. And you mentioned it just a moment ago. We have to build trust in order to do that. Regardless of how you entered the country, you're here now. And the Constitution, as I read it, you're afforded all the rights and protections as anyone else who's in the United States. My goal is to build safe communities. One of the goals of Durham County is having safe communities. I ran on safe and inclusive communities. Again, it's not my job to enforce immigration law. Do I support illegal immigration? No, I don't. I would like for everyone to come through our borders in a legal way. Unfortunately, that's not a process that's in place right now for everyone to avail themselves to. So the illegal part, I recognize it, I understand it. It's just not a function of the Durham County Sheriff's Office.
When you say safety, what is it about building trust in a community that adds to the safety of that community? Where's the connection there?
Well, it's the old saying, see something, say something. And in minority communities, particularly immigrant communities, they are victimized and they do not call law enforcement to identify the perpetrator or even to report their victimization. So the crime cycle just continues until they invite us in to investigate, to assist them, to ensure their safety. Now, we can respond to calls or we can do aggressive patrol, targeted patrol, but until we can develop relationships where individuals feel comfortable calling us in and letting us know what's going on, we're not going to break that cycle. And my goal is to build those relationships to break that cycle and make everyone safe.
You expanded the conversation just a minute ago when you talked about minority communities. There are those who have been living here for generations, and let's talk in particular about African-American communities where the bond of trust seems to have broken. Lots of headlines, lots of videos would suggest that there is good reason not to trust law enforcement if you're a person of color. How do you approach that? I mean, first of all, how do you see if a member of a community of color comes to you and said, we don't trust you. We've seen what happens. I've been pulled over too often for nothing. I know somebody who's been shot in the streets, et cetera. How do you respond to that?
This way, and you're absolutely right. And I'm having the same conversations in the Black community that I'm having in the Latino community. And that's the third pillar of what I ran on. I ran on transparency, engagement, and accountability. So when I talk to the Black community, I recognize the distrust, and I acknowledge the distrust and how we've broken those relationships. So give me an opportunity to rebuild that trust and establish a new relationship and know that I'm going to hold my deputies accountable for their behavior and myself accountable for my behavior, and let's start working together to cure some of the ills that have been plaguing the Black community for years. And I've been doing this for 35 years, and these issues are not new to the Black community. I just think we need to be more deliberate in having conversations in the Black community about trust. And again, you see something, call us. You know whose son or grandson or granddaughter is out here with a weapon, with the drugs, who's unfortunately engaging in domestic violence. Call us. Let us know. Let us get them some help.
All right. See something, say something puts a burden on the community. What about your office? What changes there to build that trust?
That's the engagement piece. I'm putting myself out in the community on a daily basis. I'm wanting my deputies to get out of the car, to patrol the areas, but to get out of the car and shake hands, build those relationships. We have to break down those real and perceived barriers and just start building community trust.
All right,
one community at a time.
Yeah, but what about training? Because I've seen, and again, not necessarily and certainly not in particular the Durham County Sheriff's Office, but in some of those videos I've seen, there's a question of training that comes to mind right away. What do we do about that? Do you change the training protocols at all?
Well, I think we do. And I think we start right here in Durham County. This is a national issue. As you know, you mentioned Ferguson and Cincinnati and Chattanooga and New York, other jurisdictions where horrible incidents and tragedies have occurred. We have to start with recruiting before we get to training. Not everyone can be the police. Not everyone can wear this badge and have the level of authority and power that law enforcement has. So we have to recruit the right individuals. Then we have to train them. And what I mean by training, we're mandated certain training in the state of North Carolina, but we can go one step further and do some implicit bias training, do some crisis intervention and sensitivity training. All of the deputies at the Durham County Sheriff's Office will be trained in crisis intervention as we work with our mental health population. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're at about 65%. My goal is to have 100% trained by the end of this calendar year. That gives us, gives the officers a more understanding of how to deal with special populations, like I said, those who are dealing with addictions, mental health issues, and certainly our ethnic differences.
A lot of people are saying that some of the problem, some of the mistrust begins right in our schools, a school-to-prison pipeline that many say is contributed to by having police officers on campus that criminalizes what had been simply an in-building problem.
And I would disagree with that assessment. Obviously, we have to work on our school resource program. I've had great conversations with our superintendent, Dr. Mabinga, and we're talking about how do we retool our SRO program here in Durham County. And we do that through training. We also do it through working with our administrators so they can understand their role and the role of an SRO.
The school administrators.
The school administrators. Yeah, yeah. And they're completely different. We should not be calling an SRO or a deputy to deal with a behavior issue in a classroom because then it turns into a completely different situation. SROs are there to support the learning environment, support the administrators, but most importantly, I want to put resource back into the resource officer so that the students, the faculty can all feel like they can come and talk to this deputy when there's an issue to get advice and to share ideas and hopefully work together to resolve any issue without involving the criminal justice system.
Well, let's take an object lesson, if we can, or a hypothetical case study. If a behavioral problem turns into a fight, you know, on the street, by your lights, that's an assault. You know, when I was going to school, it was a fight, and my parents came to school. I did not come before the criminal justice system for those many fights I was in. What do you do when you wear a badge and assault has been committed, but it's really a fight among third graders? Yeah. And we've seen that this is not, I mean, it sounds silly, but in fact, kids are coming in contact with the criminal justice system that young.
Yeah, no, I agree. Again, I think, once again, this is a national topic that we need to take a close look at. And it does go back to training and understanding of the varying roles between the school administrators and the law enforcement. And in a situation like that, you're absolutely correct. That could be an arrestable offense. But here in Durham, we have diversion programs, we have in-school suspension, we have the misdemeanor diversion program. None of these young men and women should be subjected to a criminal charge for getting into a fight like you and I did when we were in middle school or high school. We need to work with our administrators to make sure that they have the proper programs in place to address that behavior issue. The other thing I'd like to see, and this came up in a town hall I had a couple of weeks ago, I'd like to see more counselors in school. I can reduce the number of SROs in schools if we had more counselors and more resources so that we could all then work together.
So part of this is a budget question. We're going to have to spend a little more money, you think?
It is. It is a budget question, yes.
Jail reform is something else that you talked about, and bail reform in particular. Talk about the problems created by our bail system.
Well, let's talk about the jail reform first, because that is under my authority. As the sheriff, I am the custodian of the detention center. Right now, our numbers are extremely low, 388 as of this morning, if I'm not mistaken. Our DA is doing a fantastic job keeping her word about not prosecuting low-level offenders and also looking at those who have been sitting in jail on misdemeanor charges who just simply can't afford to get out. So she's making good on her promises as well. But for me, my job is to make sure that all those men and women who are incarcerated are treated with dignity and respect. We're going through a renovation program right now to address some of the risk issues of the hanging issues. Unfortunately, we've had far too many incidents in our detention facility. So we're undergoing a sort of a facelift on the inside to mitigate those risks. And as it relates to bail reform, I've said publicly that I support it. I have absolutely nothing to do with setting the bail schedule. That's the judges and the DA's conversation. But I support it. Anything that we can do not to criminalize poverty, not to criminalize 16 and 17-year-olds from making a mistake, I support that. But for every decision you make, there are consequences. It doesn't necessarily mean you need to go to jail.
What about, I mean, I'm thinking about the backlash, too. The minute you, I mean, you think about the number of people who have been left in those situations and conditions and had perhaps deteriorating and untreated mental health conditions and go out and something awful happens. There's no way to track that. There's no way to tell the story that the fact that somebody stayed in jail too long because they didn't have the $400 or $500 to get out created a mental health or exacerbated a mental health problem that led to a crime later on. But if I let them out and said, well, you don't have the money, we'll ask you to come back when your time, and they commit a crime, that's going to make a headline. It's going to make your job harder to run for re-election.
It is. It's not a perfect science. And we know these things can happen. They have happened. But through our diversion programs and our pretrial release programs, there's an interview process. So we really try to identify the factors that point to A, this person will reoffend, or B, this person is less likely to reoffend. And so there's a science that goes into who gets out. So we're not just opening the floodgates and letting everyone out. But again, it's a balance. And I think in law enforcement, we have to strike a balance. And unfortunately, over the years with mass incarceration and three strikes, you're out, we have not done a very good job of striking that balance. A lot of people have suffered, because they can't afford the $500 to get out. So now it's time to reverse that.
Reducing gun violence, another mark of your on your platform. You ran on that idea. May 22nd, many Durham headlines read, 3 dead in 3 days. It looks bad.
It does look bad. It could be a lot worse. And I am working with our Chief Davis here at the Durham Police Department. I'm also working with our legislators to promote good, sensible gun legislation. And for me, that looks like sensible gun ownership as well. All the guns, or a lot of the guns that we're seeing on our streets here in Durham have been reported stolen, either from a car, a vehicle, or someone's home. So gun owners are not securing their weapons, making it more difficult to have them stolen and end up in the hands of someone who's going to use them for a crime. So we've got to be smart, but then we also have to be aggressive with our violent offenders. And so working with our state, local, and federal partners addressing gun violence and tracking guns, tracking the ballistics of particular guns is an initiative that we are currently using. So we can say this weapon's attached to this individual. He's a bad character. We need to treat him a certain way.
Do we need any legislation to restrict gun ownership?
I don't think so. I don't think it's a matter of restricting gun ownership, and I completely support the Second Amendment. I just wish everyone would read the entire amendment and get a full understanding of what the Second Amendment intended. But that's another show.
So, Frank. What part are we missing?
Well, what I will say is I support responsible gun ownership. Right now, in the Constitution, we have a right to bear arms. If you're going to do so, let's be smart with it. Let's secure the guns. Keep it out of reach of our children. Keep it away from our youth and secure it. Please don't leave your gun on the backseat of your car when you run into Publix.
I'm just thinking, look, seriously, the mass murders that have been committed in this country at a rate that is absolutely unconscionable and frankly savage, that any country would allow this kind of thing to happen and not do a thing about it. They didn't steal those guns. As far as we can tell, they bought the guns that committed the murders, and the mass murders in the schools across America.
And see, that's the other side of the conversation, Frank. We have to really look at these mass shooting incidents that are occurring at a tragic rate. And most of the perpetrators in those shootings have a mental health background issue, have a mental health issue. So we've got to do better. The Gun Violence Act that Representative Morey has put forward addresses that.
So that means we need a little bit more restriction. We need at least some kind of gun ownership.
Yes, we need restrictions on who can own weapons, and we have to ensure that background checks are done, and if you have a mental health issue, that needs to be addressed, and that should be a disqualifier. Unfortunately, right now, it's not.
Clarence Burkhead is the sheriff of Durham County. What a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking with
us. Thank you, Frank. The pleasure was mine.
You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Coming up, a conversation about a debut novel in West Mills, North Carolina. Stay tuned.